You're listening to Closer Look on this Monday afternoon. Glad to have you along. I'm Rose Scott.
And I'm Dennis O'Hare. He was the nation's second highest ranking military officer and now the former vice chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, has a new job here in Atlanta as distinguished professor at the Sam Nunn School of International Affairs at Georgia Tech. Admiral James Sandy Winnefeld joins us now. Admiral Winnefeld, welcome. Good to have you.
Well, good afternoon, Rose and Dennis. It's great to be with you.
You were vice chair of the Joint Chiefs for just under 4 years, and during that time, of course, there was the rise of ISIS as a threat to American national security. But from a military point of view, as serious as ISIS is, do you think it is the most dangerous military threat we face right now?
No, I don't necessarily think that. You know, we view military threats in terms of capability and intent. And certainly ISIS has more intent than anybody else on the planet right now of causing us harm. But they don't have nearly as much capability as others. So if you balance those two out, there are probably other threats out there that we would rank higher than ISIS, although we take ISIS very seriously.
And which are the most serious military threats in terms of capability, as you mentioned?
Well, in terms of capability alone, you'd have to point to any nation that can, cause the United States to cease to exist, and that would, of course, be Russia and followed closely by China. Obviously, they have a lot less intent than an organization like ISIS, but when you balance those two together, you certainly have to take the Russian threat seriously.
Admiral, there's been a lot of talk about intel and our alliances and who the United States can trust. What, in your opinion, Admiral, what's the state of our alliances right now? And second question is, could we assemble an effective military coalition against ISIS if needed?
Well, first, I don't think any nation on Earth has had as many allies as the United States currently has and has in recent years. I think it's a statement about who we are as a country, about our adherence to a rules-based international order, and people trust us. So we do have a good, strong alliance system. Regarding your second question with ISIS, we have a pretty good coalition put together to take on that threat that involves a number of countries with whom we're very close, France, Britain, Australia, others. So I think that what really is called for here is patience, strategic patience. We knew this is going to take a while to take on this threat. We need to see some reforms in Iraq, and we need to see the Iraqi military step up to the plate. That's going to take some time. T.E. Lawrence said long ago that it's better that they do it imperfectly than we do it perfectly, and I think that's something for us all to keep in mind.
Is it tough to detach yourself? And of course, you're on with us. We're here to talk about another venture in your life, but we start the interview with something else. So is it tough to detach yourself from your former job? And do you get tired of actually even fielding questions from people like me and Dennis as we talk about ISIS and military action?
No, I had a wonderful 37-year career, worked with the most fantastic people I can imagine, both military and civilian, during that time. I think it's best to go out at the top of your game, and the thing that gives me great heart and hope is that the people following in my shoes and other shoes are incredibly capable, smart, young men and women, both entering the service and at senior levels of the service right now. So I'm quite confident in who we're leaving behind, and I'm comfortable moving in a new direction.
If you've just joined us, we're talking with Navy Admiral James Sandy Winnefeld, the former vice chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. His new job is as a professor at the Sam Nunn School of International Affairs at Georgia Tech. And Admiral, we'll get to what you'll be talking about with students in just a second. But speaking of Sam Nunn, he was with us on this broadcast a few weeks ago, and we talked about the Iran nuclear deal. And you said it's hardly perfect, but it's worth accepting. Are you concerned that it would leave the U.S. vulnerable, or Israel, for instance, vulnerable militarily if it were accepted?
Well, the first thing I'll say is, as a former military officer, I'll still steer well clear of what has unfortunately become a deeply partisan debate over the nuclear deal.
Yeah, but we're trying to get the military rather than the political
right.
side of this here. We're not trying to drag you into politics.
That's right. And I do think we'll end up with better insight into the Iranian program with this deal rather than without it. I try to remember that the stated position of several recent presidents, including President Obama, is that Iran will never have a nuclear capability. And in this previous job that I had, I was responsible for ensuring the president has the options he needs if he has to use force, and he does. And I would say that this deal will ensure that we will gain international acceptance if he ever does have to use force. So I'm confident that we will not be threatened by an Iranian nuclear weapon. And I'm also comforted that one of my jobs most recently was to help ensure that Israel has what it needs to defend itself directly. And we're very committed to their defense as well.
If the Iran deal does not go forward, though, what are the likely consequences? And are there enough inspections, do you think, to, again, from a military point of view here, to make sure that they are not on the path to a nuclear weapon as long as this agreement is in place?
Well, I would say the inspection regime isn't perfect, and inspection regimes are never perfect in arms control agreements and the like. But I do think that we will gain better insight into this program with the provisions that are in place than we would have without it. We've done actually fairly well without having any formal agreements such as this one. But, you know, life changes, and I think that we're going to need to have the insight that this agreement will give us. So I am fairly confident in that part of it, of the deal.
Admiral, let's get into what you will be doing at Georgia Tech. And I think this is just some friendly advice. Now, when the students on that first day, if you're having trouble connecting with them, just say, hey, I was the guy that inspired Top Gun, the movie. And I think that that might, but you actually served as a sort of a consultant for that movie, correct?
I was on the staff as an instructor at Top Gun when the movie was filmed, which was quite an experience. The flying was somewhat benign because it's hard for a camera to really capture the violence of the flying that you
sure.
normally do. But the most fascinating thing for me personally was watching them build this movie on the ground. And there were times when I said, these people are complete idiots. And then when I saw the actual screenplay, you know, the movie, I said, you know, these people are brilliant. They really know what they're doing.
Let's get into what you'll be doing over at Georgia Tech. How excited are you, though? I mean, you're leaving from one area and you're going to be sort of helping shape minds. But in this day and age with generations, as you know, they'll probably be firing a lot at you. So how excited are you?
Well, I'm very honored that President Peterson of Georgia Tech and Senator Nunn would invite me into this role. It's a tremendous honor to be asked to contribute in this way, particularly to my alma mater, to which I owe so much. But I look forward to working both here in Washington and in Atlanta, trying to add value to what the students and faculty are doing with the humble experience and contacts that I've developed over 37 years, and in particular the last 4 years. I'll also probably give a couple of seminars on the national security process and on leadership, because I know Georgia Tech is trying mm-hmm. to inject more leadership into its curricula, and a few interesting speaker events and the like. There are a lot of opportunities in this job, and I'm really looking forward to it.
You're going to be speaking to an audience that is civilian. I mean, you could have gone to one of the military academies. Why, aside from the fact that it's your alma mater, what is it about speaking to civilian students at Tech that drew you when, certainly with your experience, you could have gone to West Point or Annapolis or any of those?
Well, there are an awful lot of really great people working at the service academies that could provide those kinds of perspectives. I don't know that Georgia Tech has a lot of the national security perspective that I've experienced for the last 37 years, so I might be able to, you know, have more of an impact at Georgia Tech than I would at the service academies. And as you pointed out, it's my alma mater. I feel like I owe them a little bit of attention in return. And I'm very excited about this generation of young men and women coming into the workforce. And these millennials are fantastic to work with. And so having the opportunity to do it at the nexus of engineering excellence and international affairs, I think, is a neat opportunity in Atlanta.
That brings us to the world that they'll be facing, assuming they graduate from the School of International Affairs and want to pursue that as a career, either on the civilian side or the military side. Are they going to be facing threats, particularly in the cyber world, that our generation really never even foresaw?
Well, things change generationally, as you well know, and cyber, of course, is one of the facts of life that is confronting us currently, and this generation is right in the thick of it. It's a wonderful opportunity, I think, for some of these people to dig into that and to come up with creative solutions, both on the technical side and on the human performance side and the policy side, for how we can tackle the challenges that we're facing in the cyber realm, and including, you know, answering questions like what constitutes a hostile act in cyberspace and how do you do cyber deterrence. And it's a whole field that's opening up, and I think some of these folks will find themselves in the thick of it.
Admiral, how much do you think you need to also go back a little bit, revisit history, and sort of bring this new generation sort of up to speed on international relations, international conflicts, how it's evolved throughout the years? Because for many of them, all of them probably, they won't know of many events that have taken place in this history, in United States history. So how much connection would you have to do there?
Well, I think that there's nobody better qualified to make that connection for these students than the fantastic faculty that is currently in residence at the Sam Nunn School. I had the opportunity to spend some time with them last week, and it really is a remarkable group of men and women on that faculty. So they'll do a terrific job, but you're hitting a very important point, and that is having a good background in history is certainly very useful to anybody who enters the international affairs field. Things change, but they also remain the same. And it's important to be able to trace back and understand what tends to be a constant or a rhyme in international affairs.
Admiral, do you think, you were mentioning what constitutes a hostile act in the cyber world. Do you think that some of the hacks we've seen lately, particularly ones suspected of coming from China, are in effect military actions?
Well, I think there's some careful distinctions that we're trying to draw to educate ourselves about. I think there's the clearest distinction is if a cyber attack causes actual damage, whether it's physical or intellectual property damage or what have you. And I think that the Sony hack would probably clearly fall into that category. When you're now talking about exfiltrating information, that you start to get into a gray area there where there's a difference between espionage and an actual hostile act. And that's a line we need to be very careful about drawing.
And just as a final thought, we're about to go into a feature about the two women who just graduated from the Army's Ranger Training Program at Fort Benning here in Columbus. Your thoughts on what that might mean to the future of women in the military?
Well, I think it's absolutely fantastic that those two women persevered and went through and made it all the way through the Army Ranger program, which everyone knows is extremely tough, and they didn't lower their standards one bit for these two gals. I've long been a supporter of women in the military, and I believe firmly that women should be allowed to participate in military activity where they can meet the standards that are set for everybody who wants to participate in that activity. And we've just seen two great examples of women who have crossed that line. So I think it's a very interesting and exciting moment. Women have pushed very, very hard to move into things like submarines and fighter jets and the like, and they're doing very well. So count me as one who's very proud of those two gals.
All right. The former vice chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, now a professor at the Sam Nunn School of International Affairs at Georgia Tech. And, of course, you know, look, football season's coming up, so
you guys. Go Jackets.
Yeah, all right. Now, you really think they're going to go far, Admiral?
I do. You know, they had a magical season last year, pulled some very interesting games. If you just look at the Georgia game last year, what happened in the closing minutes of that. I think Coach Johnson is a remarkable leader and motivator. We got some good people returning. It's going to be a fun year, I think.
All right. We'll see what happens. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you.